Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. In the Gospel, Jesus tells us to become like little children. We get so many little ones calling into the show every day, it seems, that we made a special encore where I answer just the kids' questions. I hope this show not only brings a smile to your face and hope to your heart, but also helps you to reclaim the innocence and trust of children, which we must have in order to enter the kingdom of heaven. Let's see, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Chase now in Phoenix. Good morning, Chase. Welcome. You're first up today.
Hello. So my question is, what will heaven be like?
If only I had the answer to that question. I can say this much, Chase. It'll be far, far, far better than anything you and I can imagine. Whatever you think it's going to be, it'll be way better than that. St. Paul, in the New Testament, he said that he was caught up into the third heaven. And he said, eye has not seen, nor has ear heard what God has prepared for those who love him. So I guess that was his way of saying he caught a glimpse of it. He saw some of it, but it was so beyond anything we can imagine that he couldn't even put it into words. So I guess I would have to take the St. Paul route on this one and say it's going to be glorious. It'll be beyond anything we can imagine. You'll have powers and abilities in heaven that we can't even dream of here on earth. After the general resurrection at the end of time, you'll receive your body back. In the meantime, between your death and the general resurrection, we will be disembodied spirits. You know, God created you as a human being to have a body and a soul united together. That's one of the things that's so bad about death, is that it becomes unnatural for us when our bodies and our souls separate. But in the end, you'll receive your body back. It'll be glorified for all those who are in heaven. And those who are damned will also receive their bodies back. But for all eternity, we can say this much, for all eternity, you will experience the joys of heaven bodily and spiritually. So it won't be merely in your mind. Whatever it means, is there food? Is there, you know, are there trees and mountains? And a lot of people wonder, will there be animals? I mean, these are questions that we don't have answers to. But we know it's going to be wonderful. So that much I can tell you.
So, like, what kind of powers?
Well, Jesus, as for example, you know, after the resurrection, he had the powers to, in his glorified body, pass through walls and doors. We obviously can't do that now. We know Jesus told us that the saints in heaven, and the angels as well, he says there's great rejoicing in heaven when even one person, one sinner, repents. So if there are, let's say, 8 billion people on planet Earth right now, give or take, let's assume that a few million at any given moment are repenting of their sins. That would be just a small drop in the bucket. But even if it were, let's say, 10 or even 100 million people who are repenting of their sins, Jesus says that those in heaven are aware of individual repentances. How can that possibly be? How could we in heaven know something like that? I would say that's another power that the saints in heaven have that we really, it's beyond us to be able to imagine what that's like. It is interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, when is your 12th birthday? I have a reason for asking.
Okay, so I just had my birthday, August 15th.
Ah, the Feast of the Assumption. Well, maybe you can talk your parents into getting you a belated birthday gift, okay? I would ask them to get you a book called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven by Dr. Peter Kraft. I don't know if your mom's in the room listening, but if she is, that might be a good belated birthday present or maybe a Christmas present if you're a good boy.
So I'm sure you are. Have one more question.
All right. Did you get the book title down?
Yes.
Okay. I think you'll like that book. Go ahead. What's the next question?
Do you know Father Keith Kenny?
I do know Father Keith Kenny. I knew him when he was seminarian Keith Kenny at the Pontifical College Josephinum. Is he your uncle?
Yeah.
Great guy. I used to hang out with him. I was doing a master's degree in theology a million years ago while he was a seminarian there. And so on breaks, we would have coffee and talk. He told me all about his time in the Navy. He's a really good guy.
He just moved churches. He's in St. Anne now.
St. Anne's in, is that Chandler or where is St. Anne's?
Chandler.
Chandler. I know that church. Well, he was for a long time up in, I think, Bullhead City or up in that area. And so now he's back in civilization. Please tell him hello for me. I haven't heard his name in a long time, but next time I'm in Chandler, I need to look him up. Tell him I said hello, please.
Okay.
I hear he loves to be hugged. That's actually not true. He hates it. All right. Thank you, Chase.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven. That's the book by Dr. Peter Kraft. Because I know people are going to call him. What was the name of that book that Patrick was? Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven. And I know his name looks like it would be pronounced Kraft. That's how I would pronounce it. But I know Peter, and it's pronounced Kraft. K-R-E-E-F-T. He's a philosopher. He's been a professor of philosophy at Boston College since, I think, 1965. He must have been a really young guy when he got his PhD, and he's been teaching there continuously since about 1965. So he has written many books, well over 100 books, and they're all good. I think he is our generation C.S. Lewis, personally. So Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Heaven by Peter Kraft. How about Christopher in Albuquerque? Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Father.
Hi. You know, I'm not a priest. I'm a dad. I have a lot of kids, but I'm not a priest.
Why did God make the devil?
All right. Well, when God made him, he wasn't the devil. So God made him as a very good, beautiful angel. And because God loves the angels, just like he loves us, human beings, and he wants us to be able to love him back, you have to be free to love somebody, right? You have to be, nobody can force you to love them, right, Christopher? You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So because God loves us and because he wants us to love him, we have to be free to love him in return. And what happened with the devil was when God created him, he created him good and beautiful, but the devil did not want to love God. So he changed from being a good angel to being a bad angel. We call those the devils. So it was his own fault. And God wanted him to be good and gave him the opportunity to be good, but that angel said, no, I'm not going to be good. And he turned against God, and that's how he became the devil. So God did not make him as a devil. Does that make sense?
Oh.
All right. Well, Christopher, I hope that helps. Let's go to Ezra in New Mexico. Hello, Ezra.
Hi. I have a Patrick. I have
Hi
a
there.
Question.
Okay.
Is cussing a mortal sin or a venial sin?
How old are you? Let me ask you that question first.
I am 8.
Okay. And I will answer your question, I promise you, but I'd be curious to know, how do you understand the difference between a mortal sin and a venial sin? Do you know the difference?
Yeah, a mortal sin ruins your relationship with God, and a venial sin is still a sin, but it just ruins a tiny bit of it.
That's a good way of putting it. Another way, and you're right, of course, another way to say it is that a venial sin weakens it. It doesn't fully kill your relationship with God the way a mortal sin does. But you're right. You're right about that. So the reason I ask you is because I think that for someone like you, who, and you're young, in fact, you're what they call just above the age of reason. The age of reason is where a child becomes old enough to really begin to understand things like this. And usually that's about 7 years old. For some kids, a little younger. Some kids a little older. Quite frankly, Ezra, I know some adults who haven't quite attained the age of reason yet. But in any case, and no, Cyrus, I'm not talking about anyone in my family. I've dealt with people. Maybe you have too. You wonder. So Ezra, for somebody who's older and who really understands that cussing is offensive, and you know the worst type of that would be to take God's name in vain. Don't ever do that. Don't ever cuss either, but definitely don't ever take God's name in vain. That could be a mortal sin for somebody who's old enough to really understand why that's bad. But for a younger person like you, if you are aware and you think in your mind, I know God doesn't want me to do this, and I know I shouldn't do this, and I know my mom and dad told me not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, I think that certainly would be a sin. But it's hard for me to know whether it would be a mortal sin for someone as young as you. Now,
and
if it's... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to make my first Holy Communion and my first confession soon.
I am so happy for you. I'm really happy for you. Are you excited about that? Not about me being happy for you, but I mean, are you excited about receiving your sacraments?
Yeah.
I bet you are. I remember when I made my first Holy Communion, and there's a picture here in the house somewhere, or back at my house somewhere, about what you know, what that looked like. So I can just picture, you know, that great day for you. Well, this is good that you're thinking about this, because obviously when you go to your make your first confession, you'll want to think about, is there anything that I did that I should talk about to the priest? And that would be probably things like, were you obeying your mom and dad? Were you doing your chores, telling the truth, you know, not being mean to people, things like that. But it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love it. Well, what do you think? Oh, his line dropped. Oh, boy. Oh, well.
What a smart little caller.
Indeed. Indeed, sir. You are correct, sir.
These listeners are... the kid was 8 years old.
Yeah. I don't know why he left so quickly.
I
thought we were having a great conversation.
Off to school.
That's probably it. His mom just said, okay, that's enough. Time to go. Thanks, Mom, by the way, for letting him call. You know, when the kids call in, I know that Mom's right there, you know, helping them, coaching them. And often they do need a little bit of coaching.
Sometimes you can hear him whisper.
Tell him this.
Ask him your question.
And you know how when you're little and you don't realize that if you just nod your head while you're talking on the phone, the person on the other side can't see you?
My kids will, well, they're older now, but they would wave.
Yeah.
They can't see you.
They can't see you. And that's the thing I probably hear more frequently than anything is the mom saying, say yes.
Or say yes. Yeah. Say hello.
Just like you tell me. Go to a break.
It's not time yet. Right. You still have a little time before you have to go to a break. So take another caller.
They can't hear us, can they? All right, here we go. Let's see. How about Isabella in Philadelphia? Good morning, Isabella.
Hello.
Hi there.
How
old are you?
I'm 7.
Wonderful. Have you made your first Holy Communion yet?
Yes, I have.
Wonderful. Congratulations. What would you like to ask me?
Well, why do we receive on the tongue?
You're talking about Holy Communion?
Yep.
Well, for a few reasons, and by the way, not everybody does anymore. It used to be everybody received Holy Communion on the tongue, but a long time ago in your lifetime, I mean, it was, say, 50, 60 years ago, a lot of Catholics started receiving communion in the hand, and you'll see that a lot now. Most Catholics, I think, receive communion on the hand, but it didn't used to be that way. For a very long time, like well over 1,000 years, Catholics didn't receive on the hand. They received on the tongue. And the reason, well, reasons were a few. Number one, you know how Jesus is the good shepherd? He talks about himself as the good shepherd and he protects the sheep. You've heard about that, right? Okay. Well, one of the things that the good shepherd does is he feeds the sheep. He feeds his flock. And so the symbolism, do you know what that word symbolism means? A symbol, do you know what that is?
No.
I'll give you an example. So like on Valentine's Day or just for any other reason, if you drew a heart like a, you know what a heart shape is, right?
Yeah.
What is that a symbol of? What does that mean when you draw a heart?
A Valentine's.
Yeah. And what does that mean? Let's say that you gave a card to your mom for her birthday and you drew a heart on it. What does that heart mean?
Love.
Right. Exactly. So that's a symbol. It's a way of expressing something like love with a picture or a word or something like that. So that heart shape is the symbol of love. So when the priest gives you Holy Communion and places the host on your tongue, it is a symbol of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, feeding his sheep. Okay, that's one reason. And it's not even really the most important reason, but that is one of the reasons. Another reason is that you are showing, or you want to show, and I'm sure you do, as much respect for Jesus as you can. This is why I'm sure your mom and dad taught you to genuflect when you cross in front of the tabernacle, right? Where Jesus is in the Blessed Sacrament.
Like right before I go into my pew,
yes.
I kneel with one knee on the ground and one knee up.
Yes.
And then I bless myself.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So when you do that, you're showing respect for Jesus, right? Rather than just get into the pew and you don't really, you know, pay any attention, that would not be respectful, would it? Still with me? Isabella?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're still with me. So you understand how when you make the genuflection, you're showing respect to Jesus. So in the history of the Catholic Church, for the most part, that was the way in which Catholics would show respect for Jesus in Holy Communion. They would kneel down and receive Holy Communion on the tongue. So it is a traditional way of doing it. And also, because when a priest is ordained, you know about the seven sacraments, and one of the sacraments is holy orders. That's the sacrament where a man is ordained a priest. You know, I'm sure you've learned about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when he's ordained a priest, his hands are consecrated. They're blessed with special holy oil by the bishop, and his hands are consecrated to celebrate Mass and to hold the Holy Eucharist in his hands. And so another reason why it's more traditional to receive communion on the tongue, that's how I receive Holy Communion. I only receive it on the tongue. And this is another reason. This is more of a theological reason, and that is that because the priest's hands have been consecrated and blessed for this purpose, the Church has always understood that it is appropriate, it's the right thing to do for the priest to touch the host. But because my hands haven't been consecrated and your hands haven't been consecrated, it is less appropriate for us to touch the host because it's Jesus.
Like today when I went to Mass,
mm-hmm.
We went in a line at our church,
mm-hmm.
and we walked up the line, and the priest gave me communion.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of the line, this lady was giving out communion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a different... Well, I can see what you mean. That's related because she's trying to help out, and maybe there are a lot of people there at Mass, and it would be too many for the priest to give Holy Communion to everybody. Otherwise, it would take a really long time. So sometimes it is necessary for people to help out. And so she's not doing anything wrong, but the traditional way of looking at this is that receiving Holy Communion on the tongue is appropriate for people like you and me who are not priests. And the priest holds the host in his hands because his hands have been consecrated and blessed for that. That's another reason. And I won't burden you with many other reasons, but those are three that you can think about. And maybe the most important for you is to show reverence to Jesus, to show respect to Jesus because you love him. Does that make more sense now?
Yes.
Okay. It's been very nice talking to you. I'm glad that your mom let you call me. All right. You take care. Take care, little lamb, and say a prayer for this radio host next time you go to Holy Communion. I'd sure appreciate that. I'll be right back. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149.
We've got it.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
You like it? You got it. Welcome back. 888-914-9149. How about Emilio now in Phoenix? Good morning, Emilio.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
I am well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Even though Cyrus says don't ask me, thank you anyway.
Yeah, sorry. It's kind of just a natural thing.
I get it.
My question was, and me and my mom were talking about it last night, in a situation, for example, with the Nazism. And let's just say in the situation you're hiding Jews and Nazis come to your door asking if you have any. In that situation, would it be a sin to lie to the Nazis?
I don't think it would, because you're put in an impossible situation. And so let me teach you a new word. I don't know if you're familiar with the word culpability. Do you know what that word means? Culpability?
Can you repeat it again?
Yeah, culpability. Culpability. It comes from the Latin word culpa, C-U-L-P-A, which means fault. So the way I'd explain it, to answer your question, Emilio, is that objectively speaking, you can say this action, objectively speaking, is wrong or it's sinful. But subjectively, like you are the one who's doing the act, it may be that under some circumstances, you would not be culpable for the sin in a formal way because you're experiencing great duress, great fear, for example, or some kind of external coercion that removes your freedom. You can't really freely act as you would if you, let's say, stole something from the store and your mom says, did you steal something from the store? Well, you might fear punishment, but you would have freedom to say, yes, I did steal it. I'm sorry I did that. But in a case like that, where other people's lives are depending upon you not letting the Nazis know that they're hiding in the attic, I think your culpability goes way down. And maybe it's even diminished entirely, where you're not in a formal way committing a sin, even though lying itself is a sin. I think that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it would be, do these people have a right to know whether or not you're hiding Jews in the attic? And absolutely they do not, because they want to kill them. So another school of thought is that you're not obligated to tell the truth to every single person, because not everybody has the right to know the truth. So if somebody wants to know how much money do you have in your bank account, well, I mean, if it's your mom, she has a right to know. So you would have a duty to tell her. But if somebody else said, you know, some other person, whoever he is, asks you how much money do you have in your bank account, you're not obliged to tell the truth to that person. So you could say nothing, or you could say, oh, I got $1 million in my bank account. That's not true, but it's not really a lie. It's kind of like hyperbole. So the last thing I'll say is, in a case like that, where you have no other option, there's nothing else you can do. You're either going to put these people's lives in danger, or you're going to try to mislead the people who are trying to harm them. And if that's the only choice you have, you go with the lesser of the two evils. And as I say, I think your guilt would be greatly diminished. Can I give you one other analogy? This might help you think about this. I know you weren't alive when 9/11 happened, but you probably have studied it in school, right? The attack on the World Trade Center?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the most terrible things about that whole terrible thing was that when the planes hit the World Trade Center towers, everybody above where those planes hit was doomed, because there was no way for them to get down because all the elevators and stairways had been taken out by the planes. And the buildings were on fire. And many people were trapped in those floors above where the planes had hit the buildings. And it's such a terrible thing, but someday you're probably going to see the video of this. There were people in those upper floors, and the windows were blown out, and the rooms that they were in were on fire. And the fire, if they stayed there, they were going to burn up. And so they did the only thing they could do, which is they jumped out the windows. So jumping out of a window, knowing that you're going to die, that, you know, objectively speaking, that's a sin under many circumstances. But in their case, it wasn't a sin. Their culpability was greatly diminished. They had no other choice. This is the only thing they could do. And so they didn't commit a sin by jumping out of the windows. They were trying to escape something worse. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. I think it's great that you and your mom are talking about things like this. You sound like a deep thinker.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to talk today, Emilio. Thank you. Let's go to Caesar now in Compton, California. Good morning, Caesar.
Good morning.
How may I be of service today?
So, hi. Yes, I have a question.
Okay. I am all ears.
If you don't spread the gospel, will you not go to heaven? Because I have not been spreading the gospel and I've been, like, scared.
Really? Yes. You're 11 years old, so your state in life does not require you to do some of those things that when you're older, you might be required to do. So your job right now is to be a good son, be a good student, be a good brother if you have siblings. Study hard, you know, do all the things that an 11-year-old son is called to do. Now, as you get older, it may be that, like, when you get to college, it may be, or even before that, could even happen now at school where you see a situation where somebody doesn't really understand who Jesus is or doesn't understand why Mass is important, and you could share your faith with them. That's good. That's an important thing to do if you can. But you're not under a direct obligation to do so. So you're not sinning if you're not out there passing out, you know, relevant radio bumper stickers to everybody in your neighborhood. That'd be pretty good, though, if you did that. But you're not committing a sin if you're not doing that. As you get older, there will be opportunities and even times when you should do it. And if you were to say, well, I don't feel like doing it, I could see a scenario maybe down the road where that could be sinful for somebody. But it doesn't sound like that's something you have to worry about right now.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Tell your dad I said thank you for letting you call me.
Hey, Patrick,
that helps. Hey, is that Dad? Hey, Dad, how you doing?
I'm good, Patrick. Love your show. Thank you for taking my son's call.
Happy to. Happy to do so. Some of the best calls we get on this program are from young people like your son. And I wasn't joking when I said pass out Relevant Radio bumper stickers. It's easy to do, and it's free, by the way. Just go to relevantradio.com. I'm going to pull it up right now so I can tell you exactly where to go. Go to relevantradio.com. And go to...
Where am I supposed to get it?
All right. Easy, big fella. Easy, easy. Go to relevantradio.com, and in the nav bar near the top, you see listen, support, faith, events, contact. Just mouse over the word support, and it will pull a drop-down menu down.
Okay.
Way at the bottom, Saul. Right. Pay attention, Saul.
Sure.
Okay, way at the bottom, it says request a bumper sticker.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have your shoes and your glasses?
I'm sorry.
Okay. So when you go there, you're gonna plug in like your name and where do you want us to send the bumper sticker? What mailing address do you want them to go to? But you'll also
I don't know. You say 3587.
Yeah, but not really. So at the bottom, you'll see where it tells you what station might be near you. So you'll look it up by the city. And then once you do that, you press submit. And then in the mail, you're going to get your Relevant Radio bumper stickers. And they're free.
Right.
All right. 888-914-9149. Let's go to JP in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hello, JP.
Hello, Patrick Madrid.
Yes, hello. How old are you?
7.
Wow. Well, welcome to the program, JP. What would you like to talk about?
So I was going to ask you, how did
when Jesus died, how did he save us?
When Jesus died, how did he save us? Well, in the Old Testament, you probably know the story of Adam and Eve, right? You know about Adam and Eve? Cyrus, you're going to have to help me out here with JP. Can you do that for me? There we go. So do you know the story of Adam and Eve?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know that they committed a sin by disobeying God. And what happened was they got thrown out of the Garden of Eden, and they were not allowed to live there anymore. And they lost a lot of the gifts that God had given them. And one of those gifts was that they would be able to be friends with God and see God face to face the way they did before. And so what happened was, not only did Adam and Eve lose that ability, they no longer could be in that relationship with God, but then their children couldn't, and their children's children couldn't. And all the way down to our time, all the people who have been born since then, we've been born by missing what Adam and Eve had in the garden, but they lost, and that was this special relationship with God, a special friendship with God. So what that meant was, and maybe you've heard your mom and dad talk about it this way, that the gates of heaven were closed, and that meant that nobody could go to heaven. And so the penalty, do you know what the word penalty is? Have you heard that word before, JP? Do you know what that word means?
No.
Okay. Penalty is like if you did something. So let's say that you disobeyed your mom and she said, you have to clean up your room before dinner. And you didn't do it because you did something else instead and you disobeyed your mom. So maybe your mom would say, all right, well, because you didn't do what I told you to do, the penalty or the punishment is you don't get any dessert after dinner tonight. That's your punishment. That's what penalty means. So the penalty, the punishment for the sin that Adam and Eve committed had to be paid for by somebody. But Adam and Eve couldn't pay for it because they had lost their friendship with God. And all the rest of us, after Adam and Eve, we couldn't pay for it because we didn't have that friendship with God either because of what Adam and Eve had done. So God himself became one of us, Jesus. And he, by dying on the cross, he offered his life as a sacrifice. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. But he offered his life as a sacrifice to pay that penalty that all the rest of us really owed because of our sins. So that's how he saved us, by dying on the cross for us. Isn't that interesting?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me guess, JP, I'm going to guess that that name, that your nickname, JP, is John Paul. Is that what it stands for?
No.
All right. I'm going to guess again. Is it Joseph Patrick?
Yes.
Yay. I win. But everybody calls you JP, though, right?
Uh-huh.
That's great. Have you made your first Holy Communion yet, JP?
No.
Okay. But you've heard about that, right? You've heard your mom and dad tell you that someday, sometime soon, you're probably going to make your first Holy Communion?
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Well, did I answer your question? Does that sound like you got the information you wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, very nice to talk to you.
Okay. Bye, Patrick Madrid.
Bye-bye, JP. Joseph Patrick, I'll be right back with more of the PM show, Patrick Madrid, right on the other side of this quick timeout. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Looky, Ma, I got me a radio show.
I like how excited you get.
I haven't done that in a while. Okay, let's see. Let's go to Adam in Irvine, California. Hello, Adam. I'm told you're 11 years old. Is that right?
Yes.
Welcome aboard, sir.
Hello. Thank you. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, I was wondering, what were we before we were created?
Great question. Well, I can tell you in one quick and easy phrase, you were an idea in God's mind. You didn't exist because at some point you were created, God created you. And at that moment you came into existence. But from all eternity, think about this, Adam, God has always existed. God always exists, always has existed from all eternity. And from all eternity, God had in his mind the idea and his plan for you. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, that's what you were. Now, it wasn't you, but it was God's idea of you. And then when the time was right, and it was and he was ready for you to be in, coming into existence, and your mom and dad had you, that's when you came into existence. Even before you were born, of course, but God brought you into existence with the help of your parents. I find that really amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, but I mean, when you stop and think about it, do you see how much God loves you? That from all eternity, yeah, he was planning and waiting for you. Not that he wasn't really waiting, because God doesn't wait in time like we do. We think of it that way. But his plan was for you to come into existence so that you could know him and love him in this life and then be happy with him forever in the life to come. That's why he created you, because he loves you. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I like to think about that too, you know, that God wanted me. And, you know, there will be some days, Adam, in your life, maybe you've had some already, but chances are you will as you get older, where you're going to feel very unlovable, maybe because of something you do that's bad, you get in trouble or something, and you feel very unlovable. When you feel those feelings at times in your life and you start to feel like, well, you know, I'm not such a great person, just remember that God loves you so much that knowing everything that he knows about you and everything that will happen in your life, he loves you so much that he still created you because he wants you to be happy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, well, I'm glad we were able to cover that, and tell your parents thank you for letting you call me. It's great talking to you. Let's go to Emma now in San Diego. Good morning, Emma.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
Hi, I have a question about Bible Club.
Okay.
So So yesterday I got home and I told my mom that I'm in Bible Club. She didn't sound that happy. I was wondering why, so I asked her, and then she said because my older sister was in Bible Club, and right now she doesn't believe in God at all. And she said that they talked about different religions and type of stuff. But yesterday I tried it out and I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I don't know. I'm just wondering if I should still stay in it or if I should get out.
Interesting question. Okay. Can I ask you a couple of questions? First of all, is this a Bible club at school? And if so, what kind of school is it? Catholic school, public school, or what kind?
It's a public school.
Okay. So it's like an after-school club, or sometime during the school day, you go there for an hour or something like that?
It's actually during lunch.
Okay, very good. So keep in mind, number one, that it is very good and important that you read the Bible, that you know the Bible, and the older you get, the more you want to know it, because the Bible, and I'm talking here about the New Testament, okay? You know how the Old Testament is all those books that came before Jesus? And then the New Testament is the four Gospels and all the letters that were written by the other apostolic writers after Jesus. You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason I mention that is because it's important that you know that the New Testament, so Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and all of those later books, so the total of 27 books in the New Testament, those books were written by Catholics. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, as well as all the apostles, Matthew and John were apostles. Luke and Mark were not apostles, but they were apostolic writers. They were all Catholic. They were the first Catholics. And so when you're reading the Gospels, it was not only written by Catholics, but when you see the church described, like in the book of Acts and in the epistles that St. Paul wrote and St. Peter and St. James, they're describing the Catholic Church in its infancy when it was brand new, like a little baby. Remember how Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed? And you've seen a mustard seed, probably. It's very, very small. But he says from that seed grows this huge tree. It's so big. The mustard plant is so big. It's like a tree. And even birds come and make nests in its branches. That's how big it is. So the mustard seed doesn't look anything like the tree when it's mature, but it's the same thing. Kind of like you at 11 years of age. You don't look at all like you did when you were a brand new baby. You look different, but it's still the same you. So when you read the book of Acts or the other books of the New Testament, you're seeing the Catholic Church in its infancy. Now, this is important that you understand this because there are many people, and who knows, maybe these are the people who are leading this book, this Bible club. I don't know. But there are many people who don't realize that. And they love the Bible, they love Jesus, but they're not Catholic. And so they have many mistaken understandings of what the Bible means. Take, for example, at the Last Supper, Jesus took bread and wine, and he said, "This is my body, and this is my blood." Now, as a Catholic, what do you believe those words mean?
That they're his priority.
Well, when he says, "This is my body," he picks up a piece of bread. He says, "This is my body and this is my blood." I'll ask you the question this way. And he gives this to you in the form of the Holy Eucharist at Mass. Is it just a symbol of Jesus, just a piece of bread, or is Jesus actually present in what looks like bread now? Which do you believe?
That he's actually present.
Right. Okay, exactly. Now, that's correct, because that is what he meant. And we know that because the apostles who were there taught the people who they brought into the faith, into the church, what Jesus meant by that. And we have early witnesses like St. Ignatius of Antioch, who was a student. He was a pupil of St. John the Apostle. And St. Ignatius of Antioch, he knew at least one of the apostles, and he, in his writings, was teaching about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, that Jesus is really present in the Holy Eucharist. And he learned that from the apostles. And they would know because they were in the upper room. They knew what Jesus meant when he said that. Now, here's why I'm going into this detail. Because there are many folk, many people who are good people. They're sincere. They love God. They read the Bible. But they think that because they're not Catholic, that all you have to do is read the Bible and you'll understand what the Bible is supposed to mean. And unfortunately, in spite of their good intentions, they get many things wrong. And they misunderstand what the Bible actually means. So, back to your question, this is why it can be a problem for you as a Catholic. Number one, because if you don't know your Catholic faith as well as you will eventually, and as well as you will by listening to Relevant Radio, you might not be prepared if somebody leading the Bible club says, "Well, this is what the Bible means," because he could be wrong. And what he could have a misunderstanding of what the Bible means. So it could become confusing for you. And I know your mom and dad don't want that for you. They want you to know the truth. And they do want you to read the Bible. And they do want you to study the Bible. But they don't want you to wind up with a misunderstanding of what the Bible actually means. So that would be one thing I would say if it's not a Bible study that's being led by a Catholic, and I kind of doubt it is, then maybe it's not a good idea if you're not ready yet for studying it. You could do that at home, but maybe it's not the right thing. However, maybe it's a good Bible study in the sense that people are not trying to tell you what the Bible means, but you're just reading it together. And you can always come home and tell your mom and dad, well, here's what we talked about today. And then your mom and dad could help you sort it out and say, okay, well, it's good that you read that. And here's where maybe their understanding of it is incorrect. And they can help you grow in your knowledge of what the Bible really means. That could be a good thing. So I'm not saying that if I were you, I wouldn't do it under any circumstances, but I would be really, really careful so that your mom and your dad know what it is you guys are talking about so that they can help fix any problems that might arise. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you didn't go to the Bible club anymore, I think you should still be reading the Bible and still learning what's in it. And that's a very good thing.
Yeah, it's just that my mom, we don't have a Bible at home.
Oh, okay. Well, Christmas is coming. And you can ask your mom if you could have a Bible for Christmas. That'd be a good thing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a good Bible that if you wanted to ask your mom to get you one for your birthday or for Christmas, or even just to get it, to have it, I would recommend it's called the Ignatius Bible. The Ignatius Bible. It's published by Ignatius Press. That's a really good one.
Okay.
Can you remember
thank
that name?
You, Patrick. Yeah.
You're welcome.
We'll try. Or
tell me the name. Let's memorize it together. What's the name I just said?
The Ignatius Bible.
Excellent. Yeah, the Ignatius Bible. And it's published by Ignatius Press. So if you're going to ask your mom for that, I would say ask her to get that particular Bible for you. And then start reading in the Gospels. I would say don't worry too much about the Old Testament right now. It's kind of complicated. But if you start with Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 1, and just start reading about Jesus, and then read your way through the four Gospels, that's the best place to start. You're going to love it.
Okay. All right. I will.
Okay. And do me a favor. If it's okay, you're welcome. If it's okay with your mom, obviously you have to check with her. But if it's okay with her and she lets you call me back at some point, weeks from now or a month from now, whatever, I'd like to hear about how this is turning out for you, okay? And what decisions you made about the club and all that. If you want to.
Okay.
All right. Good talking with you, Emma. Thank you. And if only, excuse me, if only more 11-year-olds were interested in reading the Bible, what a wonderful thing that would be.
Let's go to Ariana now in Norwalk, California. Hi, Ariana.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I had a question. How was God created?
Well, the answer is he was not created. Nobody created God. He has always existed. There was never a time when God didn't exist. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 8.
Okay, great question. So let me explain it to you this way. You ever, when you're in the car with your mom and dad, you ever had to come to a stop because a train is going by and, you know, the lights are blinking and the big barrier comes down so that the train can go by and then the cars can go after the train goes by? Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
Okay. So the very, very last car on the train, they're all hooked up to each other. The very last one, do you know what we call the last one at the end of the train typically? You know the word for that?
No.
It's caboose. A caboose. It's a funny sounding word, isn't it? So that's usually the last car on the train. So is the caboose moving on its own, or how is the last car on the train moving? Or why is it moving? Can you guess?
Because it's on?
It's on, that's true, but it doesn't have an engine or anything. But it's moving. You see it moving when it goes by. But do you know why it's moving? It's because it's hooked up. It's hitched up to the car in front of it. And the car in front of it is pulling it. Right? You with me?
Yes.
Okay. Now that car that's hitched up to, that the caboose is hitched up to, that car is also moving. But it's only moving and it's only pulling the caboose because it's hitched up to another car in front of it. Right? So when you see a long train go by, I don't know if you've ever counted the number of cars on a train. It could be 10, could be 20, could be 50, could be 100. Let's say there were 100 car, the train cars that are all moving. And you see them move because they're going right in front of you. But they're not moving on their own. They're only moving because the one in front of it is pulling it. Okay? What has to be at the very beginning of the train, at the very start of the train, way out in the front, what has to be there for all those cars to be moving? Can you guess?
A hook?
Well, the hook has to be there. That's true. But there has to be a train engine. You know the train engine at the very front where the conductor is? And that train engine is pulling all the other cars on the train. So the train engine is moving on its own. It's not being pulled by anything. It's moving on its own. And if that weren't there, then none of the cars behind it could move. So if you think about it, God is like that train engine. He's always there. He's always been there. And because he's there, all these other things can be in existence. This is a very deep thought, Ariana. I hope that's helpful to you. Thanks for the call. I'm coming back right after this, so please stay right there.